college, but...
A hush fell over the crowd as 10:15 arrived somehow, calling to order this meeting of the Committee on Taxes for Tuesday, March 10th. The first item on the agenda is approval of the minutes for March 5th. Vice Chair Joy, do you have a motion to approve the minutes? All right. Vice Chair Joy has moved that we approve the minutes for March 5th. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Thank you, Chair Davids, for being the person to vote on that motion. All right, we have some great bills up in front of us today. First up is House File 2715. Representative Tabke, welcome to the committee. Chair is going to move that House File 2715 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill. Representative Tabke, you have an author's amendment titled DE1. Would you like me to move that amendment?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, I will move the amendment to the DE1. Is there any discussion or questions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. The amendment's adopted. Representative Tabke, to your bill as amended.
Thank you very much, Chair Gomez and Chair Davids. I really appreciate everyone hearing this bill. House File 2715 is a critical bill for Minnesotans. Everyone is feeling the pinch on property taxes. We have had decades of disinvestment in our school districts, decades of making sure that we are not keeping up with the necessary funding mechanisms that are required for keeping our school districts and our municipalities and our cities moving forward. And so with that, property taxes have been hit in the state of Minnesota. And so they're increasing and it hits everyone. And so with this bill, what it is a targeted property tax relief in the circuit breaker bill so that we are making sure that Minnesotans who are seeing those increases in property taxes and are on the lower end of the income brackets are making sure that they are able to stay in their homes, afford them, and continue to move forward.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Okay, so there is a House research summary on homestead credit refund, the program overall in your packet. If you're not familiar with it, please review that. This is a really important measure that that helps our local governments and most importantly helps our citizens. So, all right. So we have a couple of testifiers. First up, Paul Eager. Thank you so much for being here. Please correct my mispronunciation of your name if there was one, but introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Chair Gomez, Chair Davids, members of the committee, my name is Paul Eager. I'm Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. We're a trade association and have more than 21,500 members working statewide with buyers and sellers of property at all different price points. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of Representative Tabke's House File 2715, and also just generally for the homestead credit refund program, which Minnesota Realtors has long supported as an integral program to help home ownership be more affordable. We applaud the efforts in this bill and in other bills you're going to hear later this week to improve and enhance and update Minnesota's property tax relief programs. You know, while mortgage rates certainly are driving the cost of housing, as is an undersupply that's been a big topic of conversation in Chair Howard's Housing Committee, property taxes and insurance are also contributing to the upward price pressure for homeowners. And just for some context, our research director has been tracking data, which we presented in the Housing Committee earlier this session, on the monthly PITI, the principal interest, taxes, and insurance payment on a median-priced home statewide. And that data shows that in 2025, that monthly payment was now up to over $2,600 a month. That's more than $1,000 higher than it was just in 2021. So the upward pressure on homeowners with the price of housing, the cost of homeownership is continuing to rise. This program that you're talking about today and this specific bill will make homeownership more affordable. Saving money for a down payment and purchasing a home are just the first steps in becoming a homeowner. Paying property taxes can also be a challenge, and the Homestead Credit Refund program assists homeowners whose property taxes are high relative to their income. As looking at the most recent copy of the Department of Revenue's tax incidence study, and they had information on the effect of this program, and I just want to quote that for you. Property tax refunds offset 15.9% of the residential property tax burden, and the refunds offset a much higher portion in the lowest five deciles. The strength of this program is that it provides options for policymakers to support homeowners, such as increasing maximum refunds, decreasing the co-payment percentage, which is the topic of this bill before you today, lowering the threshold percentage for determining eligibility, and increasing the household income for eligibility. And Chair Gomez and members, just another strength of this program that's worth emphasizing is that it's direct property tax relief to homeowners that does not shift the property tax burden onto other property taxpayers. Again, thank you for hearing the bill, for the opportunity to testify, and thank you, Representative Tabke, for bringing the bill forward today.
Thank you so much, Mr. Egger. Quoting the tax incidence study will always get you points in the tax committee. We appreciate it. Nathan Jessen, you're up next. Please, welcome back. Please introduce yourself as you get started.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nathan Jessen. I represent the Minnesota Intercounty Association. Just really appreciate that you all hearing this bill, especially after the conversation this committee had on Thursday. We talked a lot about cost pressures that counties in particular and other local governments are facing right now. I do think that a bill like this can help respond to those pressures that our local governments are facing, as Mr. Egger just mentioned. This is a way of providing direct property tax relief without causing a shift and causing property tax increases on other properties, whether they're homeowners or small businesses. And this is, so providing that relief without an increase is really essential. The homestead credit refund, generally the way it works is that if your property taxes exceed a certain percentage of your income, that's when you're able to apply for this separate refund program. And one thing that I think is beneficial to this approach in particular is that this is an existing tool. The homestead credit refund already exists. Taxpayers are used to it. They're already filing for refunds. You're not creating a new program. There's no new hurdles here. So you can be confident that the revenue estimate says 475,000 homeowners would benefit, that they will benefit. And I understand that this proposal does have a cost, but I do think that conversations like this and this bill should be in the conversation this year when we're talking about providing that direct property tax relief.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jessen. Is there anyone else present who wishes to testify on this bill? All right, not seeing any. Any member discussion? Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks to the author on this as a very part-time realtor. I really think that this is really going to open the doors, and also, like the testifier from the Realtors Association, what we find when we interview clients, and especially seniors that would like to move out of their multi-level homes, they can't afford to do it. $2,600 is a lot right now with their paying, and when they open up that multi-level home, it also opens up homes for new home buyers and therefore. And so I think that anything we can do to stimulate the real estate market that would help homeowners either stay in their homes or at least be able to move to another home would be great. So I really support this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Is there any further discussion? Not seeing any. Representative Tabke.
Thank you very much again, Chair Gomez and Chair Davids, for hearing this bill today. It is really important that we help Minnesotans with property taxes right now. We have, as you heard from testifiers, huge cuts that are coming to us that will affect counties, will affect cities, and this is a really great way to make sure that we are giving people what they need in tax breaks while also making sure that we're not impacting local jurisdictions. So I just appreciate everyone's support and helping move this forward.
Thank you so much, Representative Tabke. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2715, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 omnibus tax bill, and it's laid over.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. All right, up next on the agenda is House File 2499 from Representative Lee. As she's approaching the table, Representative Lee is going to move that House File 2499 be laid over for possible inclusion in the tax bill. Welcome to your committee, Representative Lee. I understand you have an amendment. It's in the packet titled DE1.
Yes.
Do you want to move the amendment, Representative Lee?
Yes, please. Let's move
the DE1. All right. Representative Lee moves the DE1 amendment. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion carries. House File 2499 is amended. Representative Lee, to your bill.
Great. Thank you, Chair. So for folks who remember, last year we heard House File 2499, but because we've had a forecast, we needed to adopt the DE1 to just update the tax years and the amounts. Want to just explain that a little bit. This year also we wanted to highlight the impact of the renter's credit given the changes in the 2023 trifecta tax bill that we passed, which made two really, really important changes. So I think these weren't emailed yesterday, but there's a printout, and I don't see the HDMI cord up here, so I'm not going to have a presentation on the screen, but if you'll refer to that, we got data from the Department of Revenue just showing the really real and important impact of, one, streamlining the process for taxpayers to be able to claim the renter's credit by making it a part of the income tax form, and then two, modifying what we count as income from, like, taxing non-taxable income to just using AGI or adjusted gross income, which is a narrower definition of income, but also arguably a more fair definition of income because we're not counting non-taxable income. And so if you'll see here, there were two really important impacts. Nearly like 74,000 more people were able to take advantage of this really important program. Because we just made it easier for them to claim something that they already qualify for. And then you'll also notice that the average credit increased, very quickly, almost like $100. And we know that this is a direct impact of the narrower definition to AGI. The Department of Revenue told us that this would likely happen. You know, they had actually predicted that maybe, like, we would help 100,000 more people, but it turns out, you know, in effect, it was maybe about 74,000. And part of that is we've talked a lot here, too, about using, like, VITA and some of the tax preparers and making sure that, like, those people help out our neighbors when they're applying to when they're filing their taxes to make sure that they are taking advantage of these programs. So I think there's, like, a little gap there, but, you know, hopefully more and more people will start taking advantage of this. So that gap, right? There's about maybe a 30,000 more people we can help. The other thing is, you know, we could help even more people by enacting House File 2499 as amended by the DE1. And so, you know, the conversation today is about bringing the renter's credit up to parity with the Homestead credit, which our colleague, our Rep. Tapke, just talked about. This bill, as mentioned last year, does two things. It would nearly double the income cutoff for claimants by increasing the threshold from about $75,000 to $145,740. So it's pretty bad. Like, our parity is definitely not there. And the second thing that this bill would do is it would raise the maximum credit to $3,560, which is almost a $1,000 increase from where it is now. And if you will refer to the latest revenue note, increasing the income cutoff would result in helping an estimated 80,000 additional taxpayers. And then increasing the maximum credit would allow people who currently take advantage of this to get an average of $560 more in their pockets. And that will potentially help 35,000 current taxpayers who use the renter's credit. So this is not an insignificant amount of money. You know, and if we have an extra $300 million lying around, like we've been talking about potentially, right? We should ask ourselves how we can close the inequity between renters and homeowners, all of whom are being burdened by, you know, increasing property taxes. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to my testifiers who can talk a little bit more about the really important impact of the renter's credit across the state.
Great. Thank you so much, Representative Lee. Once again, we have a great House research publication on this topic in our packets. I think the illustrations in the table on the back are especially helpful just to understand the impact of this. And then I would just draw people's attention to how sort of renters pay property taxes in that second paragraph, because I think that we sometimes like only think of homeowners when we're talking about property taxes, but we all pay property taxes. So thanks so much for making sure that was in the packet. All right, two testifiers. First up, Michael Dahl, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself as you get started.
Good morning, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Michael Dahl, and I'm the Public Policy Director with HomeLine, a statewide tenant advocacy organization. Thank you for the opportunity to testify again in support of House File 2499. As I said last year, it's long been puzzling to me why there hasn't been parity between tenants and homeowners regarding property tax, and so I want to thank Representative Lee for addressing this issue of parity head on. The issue, the reality is that low-income renter households are struggling. For decades, renters have faced housing costs that rise faster than wages. According to the Minnesota Housing Partnership, there's a shortage of nearly 97,500 homes that are affordable and available to extremely low-income households. That means that for every 100 renters who need an affordable place to live, there are only 35 that are affordable or available to them. 35 units for every 100 that need them. So when I heard the number $500 as part of the relief that would be extended to the average renter, that makes me very happy, to say the least. While the housing committees will address the broader housing shortage issues, the renter's credit remains a vital source of support for struggling tenant households. By increasing the maximum credit and raising income limits, House File 2499 would ensure that more renters receive more meaningful assistance to meet their basic needs. At HomeLine, we talk every day to renters about the renter's credit. They rely on this credit to purchase school supplies and clothing for their children. Some use it to address long-delayed needs, such as replacing broken eyeglasses or finally making a trip to the dentist. Others use the credit to take stock on household essentials and non-perishable groceries or simply meet car repairs. For many households, this provides a rare financial breathing room. For others, it allows them to catch up, like in paying back rent that they're due, they are overdue on. Achieving parity between renter's credit and the homestead credit is not only a matter of fairness, it's a practical step towards helping renters who are struggling to make ends meet move closer to financial stability. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dahl. Up next, Nan Madden. Welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself as you get started.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 2499, and I'd like to thank Representative Lee for her ongoing attention to the differences between Minnesota's property tax refunds for homeowners and renters. These differences sometimes have policy reasons behind them, but some are more arbitrary. Like all Minnesotans, Minnesota renters want safe, affordable homes for themselves and their families, but some folks earning low wages or on fixed incomes do struggle to afford both the cost of housing and other basic necessities. The renter's credit is one of the strategies that the state uses to reduce one of the costs of housing, which is the property tax portion of those housing costs, and it does so for workers, families, seniors, and people living with disabilities. The renter's credit refunds a portion of the property taxes that qualifying renters have paid through their rents. And as you've heard, under this bill, the maximum amount of renter's credit and the income limit to qualify would both be increased to mirror what's available to homeowners. At the same time, the bill would maintain the sliding scale structure for the renter's credit and continue to provide the largest refunds for the most struggling Minnesotans. I've also provided a handout to the committee about the importance of the renter's credit to people in every Minnesota county. In tax year 2023, more than 310,000 Minnesota households received the renter's credit, and they are found in every part of the state. In greater Minnesota in particular, the renter's credit is an important strategy for ensuring our elders can afford to continue living in their communities. In 2023, 30% of households who received the renter's credit included seniors or people living with disabilities. And in 22 counties in greater Minnesota, at least half of the participating households included seniors or people with disabilities. As you heard, the impact of the renter's credit was even stronger in 2024 after the major policy changes to the renter's credit went into effect for the first time, that Minnesotans now file for their renter's credit when they file their state income taxes instead of on a separate property tax application, and filing became simpler because the renter's credit is based on adjusted gross income. And as you heard, there was greater participation in the renter's credit as a result. And the data from the Department of Revenue suggests that likely the majority of the new filers are folks who already did qualify for the renter's credit but were not previously filing for it. An expansion of the renter's credit, such as the changes outlined in this bill, would provide a financial boost to the Minnesotans who receive it, as well as for their local communities as renters spend their refunds on rent, groceries, or other basics. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Nan Madden. All right, is there anyone else present who wishes to testify on this bill? Not seeing any. We'll move to member discussion. Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep. Lee, for bringing this bill forward. I think this is something that we've been working on for a couple of years to get that parity between renters and homeowners. I think it's really important also to at least, you know, say to renters that where they live is also just as valuable as where homeowners live, and they should be able to reap those same benefits. So I appreciate you for bringing this bill forward, and I hope that we can be able to do something with it this year.
Thank you, Representative Agbaje. Representative Roach.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate what she's trying to do here, Representative Lee's trying to do here, but the reality is the way we solve this problem is to stop putting mandates on counties. I mean, property taxes are going through the roof because we're forcing mandates on counties, whether it's paid family medical leave, African American Preservation Act. That affects these low-income, individuals the most. And so this is a Band-Aid approach on, a wound that's hemorrhaging. It's just like it's so backwards. You want to solve the problem and the mandates.
Representative Anderson.
Oh, thank you, Madam.
Can I respond to that?
Representative Anderson. Uh-huh. Let's go to Representative Lee first.
Yeah.
Representative Lee.
I wanted to thank Representative Roach for just drawing attention to the testimonies we heard last week from the counties I think beforehand, right, like they were already facing a crisis, but because of H.R. 1 and the Senate Reconciliation Act, it is clear the federal government is stealing, taxpayer dollars from counties and state governments to pay for corporate tax cuts and, tax cuts for billionaires, right? Like this is where our money is going. So it's not just, things that we taxpayers in Minnesota pay money to which we expect counties to do, right? Like we can't, we pay taxes to make sure that, EMS comes when we call for it, right? We pay taxes to fund our schools. But what has happened is that our federal government has decided that in order to quote unquote balance the budget or like finance these corporate tax cuts and tax cuts to billionaires, they are taking money away from our county governments and our state governments. And so that's unrelated to this, but like a really important thing to realize. Something that I didn't mention in this presentation, but something that I mentioned last year, in 1983, when the Minnesota legislature first put income limits on the property tax refund program for both homeowners and renters. That income limit was $40,000. And like Ms. Madden mentioned, you know, there's been a lot of stuff that the legislature has done to the program for both homeowners and renters in the last, 40 or so years. But the income limit for homeowners has continued to follow inflation, whereas the income limit for renters has not. And so there's a huge disparity, and that's why we have to fix this, because it's very clear that both homeowners and renters pay property taxes. And for some reason, folks in the legislature have not prioritized the needs of renters. I'd venture it's because most of the people in the legislature have been homeowners and not necessarily renters. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Representative Lee, I think all of us were renters at one point. I understand the logic why we have a homeowner's property tax credit for low-income folks, and I support that. But that's not what this bill is. This goes up all the way to $150,000. And I think we've discussed in this committee, both sides of that the tax policy is about our values, too. And one thing that is very important, we know from every study out there, is that people that are in that actually own their home are one of the most stable things is to get folks into that bucket of going from renting to owning a home. And that is something that we've always, from a public policy standpoint, we've always supported. And we should incentivize, frankly, people, whether that's first-time home buyer money, whatever, but we should be incentivizing that rather than incentivizing folks that are making $150,000 a year, which I would absolutely say is not low income or even medium income, mm-hmm. but incentivizing them to rent. So that's the reason the public policy, I think, has been this way historically, and I support that. So thank you.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. So the bill would increase the maximum income limit to $147,000. And that's close to 150, but so when you do the quick math, that's mom and dad making $75,000 a year. That is not being rich, and especially with increased gas prices and food prices, that's getting harder and harder for people to actually raise families and have disposable income. And so that's very much middle class, and that is what this bill is supposed to help. The other piece is I absolutely agree that owning a home is one of the best and easiest ways for low-income and middle-income families to build wealth. But we know that, in the last 10 years, the average age of a first-time homeowner has increased, tenfold. And it's harder and harder for millennials, people of my age, to actually buy homes because of private equity and all the folks who are buying up, all the companies buying up homes, right? And so that is something that we can look at, but that's we should do as much as we can, right? It's a yes and this is not, I'd say, I don't think this incentivizes people to rent. I think people rent out of necessity, right? If you don't have the down payment to buy a home, you're gonna have to rent. So it's a yes and.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Just very shortly. I think we agree on some of this, but I'm not saying it incentivizes to rent, but it doesn't de-incentivize. When people are looking at buying a house for the first time, they're looking at what are the tax savings, what are the, the whole package, not just the payment interest, the PITI, but the whole package. What does this do? And we should be incentivizing. If we're going to put money somewhere, we should be putting money to incentivize and help people actually buy. So that's, I think, where the discrepancy is. So, but otherwise, I agree that it's hard for young folks harder to buy houses. So thank you. That's all I have.
Chair Howard.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Lee, for bringing this bill forward. Since we're talking housing, I couldn't pass up the chance to just offer a couple comments. One, to Representative Anderson's point, we do subsidize homeownership quite a bit to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars through the mortgage interest deduction, and that's not income tested at all. And, we've talked about in housing a lot, when we talk about barriers to homeownership, the two things that come up the most are securing a level of down payment. So we do invest in things like first-time down payment. That makes sense. But part of it is just making sure that folks that are renting can accrue enough wealth to be able to make that down payment. And so getting to better parity with the renter's credit is going to help people move from renter to homeownership. And, of course, the other thing we do is build a heck of a lot more homes, and that's the other barrier is we just don't have enough homes, and we need to look at policy and incentive processes to do that as well. No, that's a whole longer discussion. But that just wanted to offer those comments.
Yeah. And thanks, Chair Howard. I should also mention that thank you, Chair. I should also mention that when renters are surveyed on like how they use their renter's credit money, oftentimes, right, like they're using that for medical necessities or like purchases that they've been holding off. And so I think it is really hard for people to save money, to save enough to, get a down payment to buy a home. And so, like, again, this bill bringing a parity to the Homestead credit would allow folks to start that and maybe, one day be able to buy a home. Because, again, also increasing gas prices and food, like, it's really difficult for people to save money and also afford their necessities.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I love using my real estate knowledge because I just am excited. So I really, home ownership, yeah, it's a goal of many people, not a goal of all. Taking out a home is totally a whole set of expenses that no one expects, from mowing the grass to the water heater that goes out overnight. What's burdening our first-time home buyers right now is the debt they bring into the situation. It's not just making the $150, which we think is a lot. It's not anymore because of numerous other expenses that people have. Student loans is one of the top things that takes a homeowner out of the market. The next one is credit card debt that they had that oops or some kind of medical expense. They're out of the market. So you're seeing that $150 category, it sounded great in the 80s. I never thought we'd ever see that, but now it's nothing. And they don't even have money to put into retirements. They don't have money to put in anything. So when I'm working with these buyers, and on top of that, a lot of people want to go conventional, save them a few points, which is 20% down. Their parents are still paying off their student loans, so they can't help them. So we go to the FHA market, which is 6%, and that's still a lot to put down. So I think you're seeing a lot more people stay in the rental market, which, it doesn't always make me happy, but I don't want to see them in this burdensome of expenses they have in the rental market either. If we can get them stabilized in that market, it's a lot more easier to bring them up to the home ownership level. So, Representative Lee, I really think this is a great bill, and I think I might be on it. But, I think that this is
–
Yeah, I think this is really where we need to go, is stabilize them in that market. Because the other thing I want to talk about in Representative Roach's area, we were in the same county, by the way, but what you see is urban sprawl here too, because I know that the more affordable homes are in Representative Roach's area, and as we move down to Elko and stuff. So we are putting affordable homes in those areas, but even that area there doesn't have bus transit or doesn't have the services they need to get to their jobs or clinic appointments. So I think that we're in a real big area here, and I think we do have to help our renters out. And then as we move them along, hopefully they can be, if they want to, be homeowners. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Any further member discussion? Representative Smith.
Excuse me. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Lee. I am a co-author on this bill, and I'm a renter. I think it's worth saying, as we talk about the values of home ownership, that also a lot of people do choose to be renters, or because of life scenarios, they are just renters. I live in a very transient community where people are in Rochester for a couple of years for schooling or for treatment, and are renting during that time, and then are moving either back or somewhere else. And the underlying idea of this bill is that renters are just as deserving of help when their costs of the place that they live go up because of property taxes increases as those who own their homes or as their landlords who own the property. I think that is a good principle that we should all agree with. And I'm thankful for this bill underlying that principle and happy to be a co-author on it. So thank you, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Anything further? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I just thank the committee for the robust discussion. And I think just to underscore how important this is, I know we typically talk about this program as helping some of the lowest income Minnesotans in Minnesota, but some of the trends that we're seeing is also that increasingly more middle class Minnesotans are actually using this. And so when we look at the Tax 22 and Tax 23 numbers, the percentage of people with like a max 40,000 K per year has actually decreased. And because we know that like usage of this program has increased, this means more like middle income people are actually using this. And then the other trend is, you know, Ms. Madden mentioned that in tax year 23, 22 greater Minnesota counties had at least half of the participants half of the participating households either have seniors or someone living with a disability in it. And so that's an increase from tax year 22. So, you know, it's while this program is helping more middle income folks in Minnesota, this is increasingly helping more seniors and people living with disabilities. And so just some trends to keep in mind as we think about, you know, how we use tax dollars and how we choose to help property taxpayers and really the fact that, right, like, everyone pays property taxes, and like apparently, you know, there's this kind of subconscious or unconscious decision to help homeowners, but like not renters, and like that is not okay. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. With that, Representative Lee is going to renew her motion that House File 2499, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the tax bill. It is laid over. All right, up next, Representative Lee, don't go anywhere. Would you like to move that House File 3420 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill?
Yes, Chair. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative Lee. Welcome to the committee, Representative Nadeau. Glad to have a dual presenters here. I will turn it over to y'all to present the bill.
Great. Thank you, Chair. Good morning again, everybody. So switching gears a little bit to a bipartisan bill, House File 3420, which would extend for 8 years the authority for only Hennepin and Ramsey County boards to impose a mortgage and deed registry tax of 1/100 of 1%. Do the math on that. On the principal amount of those transactions to fund each county's Environmental Response Fund, or ERF. You should have packets, and if you're confused, like the one pager says ERF, that's just what the counties are calling this, because that's the impact of this mortgage and deed tax. Currently, the authority to impose the tax expires on December 31st, 2028, and so this bill before you would extend that to December 31st, 2036. The revenue collected is used by both Ramsey and Hennepin counties for their environmental response funds. That's why Representative Nadeau is here to represent the Hennepin side. These funds must be used to remediate polluted lands, create or retain housing units, or for economic development purposes. And we are here to just share with you, and the testifiers will also talk about this, about how successful this has been. In Ramsey County, over nearly 16 million has been awarded since 2004 for the cleanup of 145 acres of contaminated land in environmental justice areas. Redevelopment projects supported by the ERF have created over 6,200 units of housing and over 6,600 jobs. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Representative Nadeau to talk about Hennepin County.
Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Lee. As most of you know, this bill was put into place. The original enacting legislation was way back in 1997. It was for the Golden Auto site in St. Louis Park.
That was a very contaminated site that Hennepin took first and foremost, and that in original language, it was limited to that site. Hennepin, since that point, has designed the Environmental Response Fund, and Representative Lee was talking about a small percentage of the mortgage and registry deed tax, but it has a large impact. Over the years, Hennepin has spent more than $50 million for eligible recipients, and it's broad eligibility. It's private companies, it's nonprofits, housing, it's HRAs, it's economic development authorities. It's money that's used that's not eligible to be used anyplace else. And these are projects that have created housing. They've created economic development. In Rogers, it cleaned up old gas stations. These are cleanup of of dry cleaning facilities. So this is, and in Hennepin, they're semi-annual. And in 2025, for example, we collected and spent $4.2 million. In 2024, it was $3 million. In 2023, it was $3.4 million. Many of these projects are leveraged with private developers. And it varies because the number of mortgage, refilings varies. And so it's an important project in Hennepin for all of our cities. And as you can imagine, a lot of the contaminated areas are areas that are more highly and have been densified longer. So you will see a disproportionate share of some of these projects going into Minneapolis and first ring suburbs, but they go all the way out to Rogers. They go all the way out to Greenfield. They go all the way out to Rockford. Happy to answer any questions specifically to Hennepin.
All right, thank you, Representative Nadeau. Turning now to testifiers. Where's my thing? All right. Josh Olson, thank you so much for being here. Please introduce yourself as we get going.
Good morning, Co-Chair Gomez, Co-Chair David, members of the House Taxes Committee. My name is Josh Olson, and I'm the Director of Community Economic Development for Ramsey County. I'm here today to ask your support for House File 3420, which would extend Ramsey County and Hennepin County's mortgage registry and deed tax until 2036. This small tax funds our county's Environmental Response Fund, supporting critical redevelopment, additional housing, new jobs, and other community benefits in Ramsey County. Ramsey County, as you might know, is Minnesota's most densely populated and fully developed county, which means that any new development in Ramsey County necessarily requires and means redevelopment. Many redevelopment sites have historical environmental issues that need to be investigated and cleaned up, including and most specifically adding significant costs. While these so-called brownfield sites are often in prime locations in core areas with good transit connectivity and other desirable qualities, the added costs do discourage developers from taking on these types of projects. Since 2004, Ramsey County has offered its Environmental Response Fund to offset these additional costs and to prepare sites for private sector investment. This funding is often essential to getting projects off the ground, particularly when developers are facing increasingly challenging financial environments. One such project, it's a recent one here in St. Paul, is The Heights. It's a 112-acre redevelopment of the Hillcrest Golf Club in the heart of St. Paul's Greater East Side, led by the St. Paul Port Authority. Despite its prime location, the site faced serious barriers to reuse, including decades of pesticide and fungicide use that left the soil polluted with mercury and petroleum residues. A $300,000 Environmental Response Fund grant helped leverage additional funding necessary for extensive remediation across the site. Now under construction, this site will include 1,000 quality homes, 1 million square feet of light industrial space, carbon neutral infrastructure, Habitat Humanity. One such part of this development has completed 147 affordable homes, and Xcel Energy has opened its first service center, or its newest service center, on the site already. Ramsey County's Environmental Response Fund frequently supports other affordable housing and new business developments across the county, including the Boulevard Apartments in Moundsview, the New Brighton Exchange, Colder Products in Roseville, the Amber Union in Falcon Heights, just to name a few. The mortgage registry deed tax is the sole source of funding for our environmental response fund. This tax, as Representative Lee noted, is a 0.01% on most property sale transactions amounts, which amounts to about $70 on a home priced at $350,000 or $35 for both from both the buyer and the seller. This funding boosts local and regional economy growth by increasing property values, getting underutilized and problematic properties back on the tax rolls, and expanding the county's property tax base. Finally, the Environmental Response Fund also supports public health. We know that low-income communities and communities of color are disproportionately affected by pollution, and Ramsey County prioritizes deploying of this funding in those communities to improve soil and water quality and to reduce social, economic, and health inequalities that are resulted from this historic pollution. We urge you to support the extension of the mortgage registry and deed tax to allow the Environmental Response Fund to continue supporting redevelopment and environmental protection in Ramsey County and Hennepin County. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next is Mary Finch. Please introduce yourself as you get going.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and committee members. For the record, my name is Mary Finch. I'm a supervising environmentalist testifying on behalf of Hennepin County in support of House File 3420 to extend the expiration date of the Hennepin County and Ramsey County mortgage registry and deed tax. The Environmental Response Fund is a catalyst for redevelopment in urban, suburban, and rural communities across Hennepin County. This brownfields funding source fills a gap in financing that can make or break a project's feasibility. Chair Gomez, I would like to highlight the Passage Community Housing site in your district. Simpson Housing Services was able to use these funds for lead abatement that helped renovate 17 units of affordable housing. Representative Joachim, Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative used these funds to support 50 units of affordable housing in your district, the Vista 44 site. These funds were used to remove contaminated soil and install a vapor mitigation system to protect the residents' health from toxic chemical vapors traveling through the ground. Representative Robbins, the Hamill Road Apartments project received funds to remove contaminated soil from a vacant agricultural property that will soon support 80 units of housing. These successes and the many more illustrated in the letters of support demonstrate the success of the Environmental Response Fund in bolstering economic and community development. But our work is not done. The program remains consistently oversubscribed. Hennepin County has more than 6,000 sites of concern, accounting for 22% of the state's potential investigation and cleanup sites. Hennepin County thanks Representative Lee, Representative Nadeau, and the additional co-authors for authorizing the bill. Chair Gomez and committee members, we hope to have your support for House File 3420, and thank you. I'm available for questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Finch. Is there anyone else present who wants to testify on House File 3420? All right, not seeing any. Any member discussion? Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the county person, just kind of curious, is there a deed tax on refinancing or on equity takeouts?
We're in Representative Hewitt's wheelhouse today, obviously. I don't know if...
Maybe Mr. Coe.
Sorry?
Maybe Mr.
Coe. Oh, yeah. Probably this is for nonpartisan. Mr. Cope?
Madam Chair, Representative Hewitt, I do believe that any mortgage that gets recorded on the property is subject to the tax, but I can get back to you if that's not accurate.
Representative Hewitt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's my only question.
Thank you. Is there any other discussion? All right. There's a giant stack of letters in your packet, practically the level of support for David's bill here. Representative Lee, did you have any final comments for us?
Just very simply, this program was first created in 1997, and like Rep. Nadeau alluded to, this was originally for Hennepin County, and so it was Chair Rest who originally proposed this idea, and so it's an honor to work with her again this year to carry the House companion, and I hope all of you guys will support it. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you so much. With that, Representative Lee is going to renew her motion that House File 3420 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill, and it is laid over. I'm speaking slowly so that Vice Chair Norris has a 30 seconds to catch his breath, just here in the nick of time. As he moves up there, Representative Norris is going to move that House File 3657 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill. Welcome back to your committee, Vice Chair Norris. Excellent
Thank
timing.
You, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. I'm pleased to present House File 3657. This is similar to the bill that Chair Davids brought forward last week. At the time, I mentioned that, like Chair Davids and so many others, I have been hearing significant concerns from my constituents about skyrocketing property taxes. In you know my county and city over the past several years, we've seen either double-digit or near double-digit increases. And with House Resolution 1 passing at the federal level, more costs from the federal government are being passed on to counties, and it doesn't look like this problem is going to get any better in the near term. But too often here at the Capitol, we address property taxes in a piecemeal way, you know, some special benefit for one type of property or exempting specific parcels. And, you know, on their own, those might be fine proposals, but they can shift costs onto homeowners and small businesses. And we rarely, if ever, step back and take a look at the system as a whole to figure out what's working and what's not. And what happens when we don't look at the system as a whole is that things start to break down in unexpected ways. You know, for instance, at our last meeting on Thursday, Representative Swedzinski asked a great question about how the market shifting is resulting in higher property taxes on homesteads compared to other properties and how that trend might continue into the future. And that's something I'm concerned about, too. It's been 25 years since we've had any systemic changes to our property tax system. And that's almost as much time as the 30 years between the original Minnesota Miracle in 1971, which was the time before that we got serious about addressing property taxes. It's kind of like we've been driving the same car for 25 years, and while it might have worked back in 2001, it's causing some serious problems today in 2026. But this isn't something that can be done on the back of a napkin. It requires serious input and study from both legislators and the people that set levies at the local level. So that's why my bill creates a property tax task force so that we can sit down and answer some of those tough questions on a bipartisan basis. My bill requires that the task force take a hard look at the data to figure out what's changed, what's working, and what isn't. And it requires the task force make recommendations to the legislature. Because we don't want to just admire the problem, we want to come up with something that we can move in 2027 to actually address the issue. I know this is a significant issue and there are no easy answers, but we have to start asking the right questions and trying to come up with answers, or else this problem is only going to continue to get worse. So given the bipartisan interest in this idea, I look forward to working with Chair Davids and other members of the committee to merge the ideas in our bills into something that can pass into law this year.
Thank you, Representative Norris. And this, is, of course, is similar to the Davids 3396 that I think we heard last week. So there's a lot of shared ground to move forward on. Beth Johnston from the League of Minnesota Cities is the testifier.
Chair Davids. Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think it's very kind of you to allow her to testify. And Representative Norris, thank you. What I did last week, I'm going to have to live with that the rest of my life.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
And with that, we're very pleased to offer Ms. Johnston the chance to testify to the committee.
Chair Gomez and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Beth Johnston, and I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. In your packets as well, there is a letter that is authored by the League and our county partners supporting this task force. As you know, the property tax system is the main source of revenue for cities. And when cities and counties set their levies last December, there was increased attention to budget pressures facing local governments. While many of the drivers of property taxes are readily apparent, like the budget pressures you heard about last week from our county partners, there are similar pressures facing cities, like the rising cost of providing services and capital projects, downstream effect of federal actions, underfunded or unfunded mandates, and then community growth or tax base expansion. Minnesota's property tax system is amongst the most complex in the country and increasingly more difficult to administer as specific property types or owners receive different treatment. The Minnesota Department of Revenue produces the Property Values and Assessment Practices Report, which provides information on market trends and property values throughout the state. And while this report is instructive, it does not make assumptions or draw conclusions onto the reasons for property value changes, levy increases, or the effectiveness of state property tax relief program. Taking the time to explore these programs and whether or not they are accomplishing the intended goals is a worthy project, and we appreciate the task force emphasis on these programs. In closing, we want the committee to know that we appreciate the interest and the league supports additional efforts to gain information on the current system. And just like how local governments' fates are tied together, we share the same tax base and taxpayers. We should also endeavor to understand the property tax system as part of our state fiscal partnership. I would also like to add that saying tax task force 10 times fast is really difficult, and that maybe we should just call it a property tax force.
Oh. All right, we're innovating here in tax committee today, ladies and gentlemen. Excellent. Thank you so much, Ms. Johnston. We can all try our tongue twister later. Is there anyone else present who wants to testify on House File 3657? Not seeing any. Is there any member discussion? Chair Davids.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, and I'd like to thank Representative Norris for this bill. We have two similar bills. I think we need to sit down, and I think the biggest thing will be to visit about who's on the task force, because I've had some really good ideas from different folks, maybe some folks from private industry, maybe some attorneys that are experts in a certain area that work with this every day. And so looking forward to working with you on this.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I support the initiative of both Representative Norris and Chair Davids on this. And this is something that I would very much want to participate in, but I think that I think that we should examine the membership. I think that there should be more legislators on this body. Chair Gomez and I have had some experience with local tax task forces that are overloaded with local government members. I think that the scope is also much too narrow. I think if we're going to undertake an effort that is Representative Norris points out, we only do about once every 25 years that we should expand it and be looking at what has happened to local government aid over the last 25 years, things like TIF, all of the various homeowner and rental credits, other local taxes that have become a much larger share, much more important in the way local governments are financed. Everything from local option sales taxes, wheelage taxes, hospitality taxes. I think that we should look at the fiscal impacts of the tax structure and how they affect development strategies, for example. Chair Davids may remember that back in 2012, there was a study of fiscal disparities, which had an appendix, which is the appendix was much more important than the fiscal disparities part. But it looked at the fiscal impacts of different types of development, which types of development were profitable or unprofitable, and how that might affect the way that cities, in particular, look at their development strategies. We should look at the whole bit of it according to effective tax principles, which is something we never do on local taxes. Look at also things like should we be paying our property taxes monthly instead of semi-annually, so you don't have these huge big chunks. Most people actually, in fact, if you haven't yet paid off your mortgage or paying your property taxes through escrow monthly anyway, if cities and counties receive their revenues monthly, they wouldn't have to build up such huge reserves between receipt of payments. So the cash flow might work out better, and incorporate also things like possibility of land value taxes and things like that as well. So I'm going to put together a list for you guys, so that you, when you, you know, are negotiating all of this, that that we can, you know, properly scope this thing.
Excellent. Representative Elkins has a list. I'm going to go to you, Chair Davids, or we'll just Chair Davids.
Well, and thank you, Madam Chair, and to represent my good friend Representative Elkins, I never said I was going to be on it.
Oh, well.
Representative Elkins.
I'll bet you would.
Okay.
Sorry, I haven't talked to any of you guys about this, but I just was looking through it, and I'm interested in just the school kind of perspective being included in this. As you talked about the Minnesota Miracle, I mean, the original kind of the reason for the Minnesota Miracle was because we had gotten to a point in our tax system where, you know, in certain communities, you know, when the responsibility for paying for education was basically completely on local jurisdictions, you had situations like in some of the wealthiest communities in the state where they would have a very low effective tax rate and the most well-funded schools. And in other communities where they didn't have the same kind of tax base, they would have very high effective property tax rates and very low per pupil investment in their students. And so we collectively made a decision that, you know, the investment that we make in our kids shouldn't depend on their proximity to a big tax base. And increasingly, we have gone in the other direction. And so I just think with the kind of importance of that issue, of like the relationship between our state investment in public education and the burdens that that puts on property taxes, that's another perspective I would like to see included here. So maybe I'll be giving you guys a list too. All right. Any further discussion? All right, seeing none, Representative Norris, please close us out.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Gomez and members. Appreciate the continued discussion on this. Looking forward to getting those lists. And then it looks like, Chair Davids, we've got some work to do.
We do.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Representative Norris. With that, Representative Norris is going to renew his motion that House File 3657 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 Omnibus Tax Bill, and it is laid over. Finally, on the agenda, House File 2303. Representative Norris is going to move that House File 2303 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill. Representative Norris, I understand you have an amendment, a DE1.
I do, Chair Gomez. This is the DE1 amendment. It makes a conforming change to base the bill off of the 2025 supplement of our Minnesota statutes and then kicks out the effective date to reflect the new year.
Great. So Representative Norris has moved the DE1 amendment. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, no. Motion prevails. The bill's in the shape the author would like. Representative Norris, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. So members, currently the homestead property tax refunds are based on what we call the household income definition, which includes federal adjusted gross income, but then adds in a lot of other non-taxable income sources. This bill would redefine income for property tax refunds to simply be federal AGI. And we've talked a lot in our committee lately about the importance of simplicity as a tax principle. And you can see here, just from the DE amendment, you know, the current definition of household income runs, you know, looks like over three pages in state statute. And what this bill would do is cut out all of those additional income sources that taxpayers have to track down and add on to calculate their property tax refund and simply base it on federal adjusted gross income. This has two primary benefits. First, it would increase property tax refunds for the majority of filers, especially seniors and those with disabilities. And two, it would simplify compliance with the tax code. So first, on lowering property taxes. There's been lots of talk about skyrocketing property taxes in this committee, and property tax refunds are one of the tools that we have in our state's toolbox to try to address it. Under this bill, about two-thirds of homeowners currently receiving a refund would be estimated to receive an average refund increase of about $370. So that's your money that is going to offset those property taxes. In addition, approximately 58,000 new taxpayers would be eligible for a refund. On the simplicity side, this is a trend of moving from the household income definition to adjusted gross income that we've seen across a number of our aids and credits in our tax code. So, for instance, prior to 2005, the working family credit used a broader definition and then was adjusted to use federal adjusted gross income. In 2017, the dependent care credit was moved from a broader household income definition to federal AGI. The K-12 education credit was did the same thing in 2023. And then perhaps most importantly for this bill, or kind of most similarly, the renter's credit moved to AGI in the 2023 tax bill as well. And the reason I'm bringing this bill forward, members, is actually because of one of my constituents, Sharon Schrader. She's one of those constituents who, you know, kind of becomes almost like a pen pal to you. She writes me frequently. Oftentimes they're encouraging notes, but, you know, she also tells me when I've gone astray from time to time. And she brought this idea to me. She's getting up there in years, and so she wasn't comfortable driving down to the Capitol, wasn't confident she could operate her Zoom under pressure. And so there's a letter from her in your packets, members. And in that letter, she shares a story about how she ended up with an unexpected audit and a big tax bill because of the complexity of the household income definition when she started on Medicare. And, you know, she was understandably quite frustrated when this happened. And you know, it has turned into her personal mission to get this changed. And I have to imagine that there are a lot of Sharons out there, older folks who are trying to stay in their homes, but rising property taxes are making it more challenging. And this is a way we can help ease some of that pocketbook pressure for Minnesotans, especially seniors, and make it easier for them to comply with the tax code. So, you know, while the cost of this bill might be prohibitive this year, I hope this bill starts a conversation for the committee about an overdue change to the property tax refund for Sharon and for all the Sharons out there across Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Norris. All right, so we have Ms. Schrader's testimony in our packets, but I don't have anybody signed up. Is there anyone present who wishes to testify on House File 2303? Not seeing any. Any discussion to the bill? All right. Seems good. Back to you, Representative Norris.
Nothing further, Chair Gomez. Appreciate the opportunity to have this heard on behalf of my constituent.
Thank you so much. And with that, Representative Norris renews his motion that House File 2303 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill, and it is laid over. All right. That's the conclusion of our business for the day. Any update on tomorrow, Chair Davids?
Well, thank you very much, Chair Gomez. Good meeting today. If I could just ask Joanna Bears when the governor's budget may be coming out.
We've heard soon, maybe next week.
So either Chair Gomez or I will be more than happy to carry that bill. Of course, you have first dibs, but I'd be happy to also. We could do it together.
We could do it together, like co-chairs.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
I love that. Okay, great.
Okay, so tomorrow we're going to make a bit of an exception on House File 3127. The PTE bill, we'll be looking at a vote on that. And then we go to Witte, House File 3816, and that would be laid over. And then it's Representative Anderson Day at the Capitol. We're going to have House File 3814, 3815, 3817. So it's going to be so much fun. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Davids. All right. So our next meeting is tomorrow, Wednesday, March 11th. We'll see you then. With that, we are adjourned.